You're listening to an all-new episode of Self-Made Strategies. Visit selfmadestrategies.com for new episodes, information about our guests, and a whole lot more.
If you're listening on iTunes or Google Play, please go to our show page and leave a review. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Self-Made Strategies. Today, we're here with Greg DeShields. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Perfect.
Yeah, and Margaret Hager is with us.
Hello.
Yeah, she'll be co-hosting from here on out. Greg DeShields is the Executive Director of PHL Diversity. Greg, why don't you tell us a little bit about PHL Diversity and what you do over there?
Sure. PHL Diversity is a business development division of the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. We are the official marketing arm for meetings and conventions in the city of Philadelphia. And PHL Diversity's division really focuses on those diverse and multicultural meetings and conventions that really helped bring economic opportunity to our citizens of Philadelphia, as well as, quite frankly, some great paying jobs.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you also help minority-owned businesses in the city generally through certain initiatives,
right? We do. The division is over 30 years in existence. And when it was originally formed, there were some priorities that were associated with it, aside from bringing meetings and conventions. One of the top priorities was to create economic access and economic opportunity for the local minority businesses. And since 1987, we've had numerous existing programs that really help to drive that type of opportunity. We have, for example, our Business Opportunity Lunch, which is our key event that focuses on the ability for our minority businesses to become directly connected to those meetings and conventions that are seeking business opportunities with them. So we spend a lot of time ensuring that that is open access as well as engaging.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And so minority-owned businesses generally, for those who don't know, are businesses not only owned by diverse minorities that are the traditional minorities,
correct,
but also women-owned businesses, LGBT-owned businesses.
Correct.
Maybe you could describe
it. Underrepresented might be the way to pursue it. But we tend to say more of just diverse businesses. We feel that there are a lot of challenges that, unfortunately, diverse businesses encounter. And what we want to do is to create a way to reduce the barriers. And I think that's probably the most important word that we focus on is how can we reduce barriers and create access?
Wonderful. And so a little bit more about your background individually. So you're also on the board of directors for the Greater Philadelphia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
I am. And we have our upcoming Alegria Ball, which I'm looking forward
to. I'll be attending as well. Yeah, looking forward to it.
When is that?
It's February 22nd.
Nice.
You know, it's interesting. I spend in my role a lot of time becoming very much engaged in our various communities. And the Latino community has been a very strong partner with our division, probably dating back to the early 90s. And by participating through the commerce aspects of the different communities, you tend to engage in a way that can help to create economic access. Now, there are a great number of nonprofits and other community-related organizations that you become connected to. But for us, the Hispanic Chamber has been one of our best vehicles.
And what about some of the other organizations that you're involved in?
Sure. So, you know, speaking in terms of the connection with the different commerce organizations, the African American Chamber, the Asian Chamber of Commerce, the LGBT Chamber of Commerce, but there are a number of organizations that do tremendously good work in the city of Philadelphia. So we support them as well by being represented on their board. So Center City District, which for years has helped to ensure the quality and the overall experience of Center City, it's one that's memorable and helps to attract visitors to our city. You know, I also believe that's important to give back. So I'm involved with a board that deals with individuals who have intellectual disabilities. And, you know, although that may not be an area of expertise, I really try to bring a business sense in terms of how that organization provides valuable resources to their various consumers.
Oh, that's great. Do you want to tell us what organization
that is? It's called COMAR. I'm sorry. C-O-H-M-A-R.
Wow, wonderful. Okay, Greg, and you're also a adjunct instructor at Temple University in the School of Tourism and Hospitality Management. Is that correct?
Correct. I spent 13 years with Temple. I was the senior director of corporate relations for the School of Tourism and Hospitality Management, and then 3 years at the Fox School of Business as their managing director of business development. What was really important for me through the 13 years that I was at Temple was how you can inspire the next generation of leaders. And as an adjunct for for 13 years, it was undoubtedly probably one of the most meaningful opportunities for me to be in front of a group of students and see them inspired. But, you know, certainly as I've moved into my role at PHL-CVB, it somewhat limits my ability to be a full-time adjunct, but I speak quite often at various classes that really focuses on issues around diversity and inclusion. And it's great, I think, for the students to hear from an individual who's in the business world, helping them to understand not just that diversity and inclusion is a good thing, but it's good for business. So I do spend a lot of time speaking to students at Temple.
That's great. And thank you so much for all that you do philanthropically, first and foremost, because I think that's Personally, I think Margaret agrees,
Absolutely.
Such a wonderful thing to see someone who's been successful as you have, you know, coming through your career in tourism and hospitality management. You've essentially worked for all of the major.
spent some time. You know, it's interesting. I worked with Hyatt. I worked with Omni Hotels. And probably between the two, as I think back, Omni was one of the most memorable organizations to work for because they were so innovative. I mean, they thought very forward about how to balance the quality of life as a hardworking manager while feeling that you were fulfilled. But yeah, it's nice to kind of connect the dots.
Good.
That's really cool.
Those places
that's
are great. Super nice too.
Yeah. How do you think organizations, so we'll dive into that a little bit. What would you advise organizations to do to be innovative like Omni in that sense, especially when Omni's a huge organization, huge
Correct.
Hotel chain? How do they maintain that focus on, okay, we need to focus obviously on the outcomes, on revenue and ROI
Correct.
And all those important business metrics, but how do you focus on those less tangible things like your managers, quality
Right.
of life, and all of those things?
I think you have to be innovative in your thinking about your organization, and you have to be willing to think out of some of the traditional approach to how things may get done, especially when you think of developing your leadership. And that, I think, is the comparison that I have with Omni. They wanted to teach leadership new forms of technology that could be used in the workplace. And what they did, instead of encouraging us to pursue our own study on our own, they made arrangements for the entire executive committee to go to a college collectively as a group. So there was a little bit of the team building for us all to sit in the same class and learn the same sort of software. We were regulated by them driving us in the shuttle, so you couldn't leave early. But it was a great eye-opening experience for me about how creative and innovative a company can be to collectively impact their employees. And I would say that for any organization that really wants to drive a new direction of success for their organization, they have to be willing to think of something that's totally different, while obviously still maintaining some of their business fundamentals to be a success. But I think as any business leader, you have to have some degree of risk-taking that's a part of your DNA. And it's not just careless, reckless, you know, risk-taking. Obviously, you want to do your due diligence and be measured, but I feel that that's probably one of the key components.
Well, thank you. That's great advice. And so that leads into our sort of first question here,
sure.
which is, what are some of the fundamental strategies that businesses, especially looking at minority-owned businesses, which sometimes, you know, could use a little bit more strategic planning, right, can use for their strategic plan overall?
I think it's more important when you think of strategic to limit what your overall activities are, that there is a plan, that we've done some analysis of our organization to know what our strengths and our weaknesses may very well be, and to begin to leverage those, kind of manage what, in fact, you set as your charted course so that you are not distracted. And I think that's where perhaps businesses that don't operate with that kind of strategy can be distracted and move in directions that really aren't keeping them focused on what they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's doing a fair amount of due diligence, doing a great assessment of your organization to chart the course. And even if you are distracted, that is thoroughly analyzed to see if, in fact, that it is still in alignment with where we are headed to as an organization.
Right.
Well, and that's interesting too, because in any business, if you're distracted, it's usually because it's something that you're not strong in. So it's like if you can
Right.
pull someone in to fill the spot that you're not strong in, that could be helpful for someone
Right.
too, right?
I just think that whole idea of developing that plan is to give you the direction that you're going. because, you know, there's that short-term strategy that you know will move you in that direction, but long-term, where are we trying to get to? And as long as that guidepost stays in place for you, it can help you to be much more successful.
Definitely. Yeah. So then how do these strategies apply to preparing a business plan?
Well, I go back to that idea of doing an assessment. Like, we're in business. Why are we in business? What is it we want to achieve? You know, for example, if quality is at the top of your overall strategy, there'll be ways of perhaps cutting costs that might take you away from a quality product. But your plan all along, your strategy all along was to be at a quality level.
Hmm.
So I think what it does for any business, it helps to keep you in alignment with where you're headed to and the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
And if you have distractions or if you move in a different direction, it will take you back to the core and find out, well, why are we in this and how do we, in fact, stay in alignment. If we had to make a decision to go in another direction, then that may be a completely different strategy, a completely different focus. But I think it's staying core to who you are.
Yeah, keeping like your integrity and like your purpose.
Right. And then focusing, as you were saying, if you do need to pivot the business, but making it a strategic pivot rather than you're just trying to put out fires all over the place, right?
Yeah.
And I think when you think of ways like, and if we stick on the idea of, you know, our overall strategy is to be a quality-oriented company, you know, there might be a range of what that quality is.
Right.
And how you maintain the consistency of it. But I think that if that is at the top peak of what you're doing as a business, it helps to keep you from being distracted and certainly moving in directions that's not part of your overall DNA.
Yeah. Did you guys see the movie about McDonald's and its start?
Yes.
Yeah. So speaking of quality, like that was very interesting. I had no idea about any of that until I saw that movie. And like, you know, the two brothers who started it, they wanted that good quality. And then the guy came in was just like, yes, for this is going to be such a huge success. So much money is going to be made. And then the quality just went down because of profit.
Right. And to some degree, that focus on quality is what helped you to have a measured approach to your success. Because the thing that you don't want to do is perhaps spread yourself way too thin, and what you originally planned on delivering is not feasible because you haven't really taken it to scale yet.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
So how can minority-owned businesses leverage their strategic plans when they're attending meetings with sort of big opportunity presenting people or when they're attending conferences? Because that's a lot of where those opportunities are going to come up.
They are. I mean, I think it's also whenever you're attending a conference or you're meeting with a client that you've done your due diligence about them. You know where the similarities are. You know where those businesses are, the business opportunities may exist. And it's realizing, how do I align what I do as a business with this company? If I, as a business, may not have the capability to deliver it in total, what are the ways that I can still become engaged and collaborative? I think the point to your question is understanding at the core of what you do, how do you take that and present it to a potential customer? And how do you align the things that you do with what they need and determine that there's some, I guess, flexibility that you might have to apply, and that perhaps you're not going to get the entire piece of business. Maybe you'll get a portion of that business, but it's staying focused on who you are, what you do, doing the due diligence and the study that you need to do on that customer so that you can better align your opportunities, but realizing that you may have to be measured or you may have to have some concessions made in order to get your foot in the door.
Right. And if we're hearing you correctly, maybe that's thinking really, really carefully about what is this individual looking for? What are their goals? What's keeping them up at night that your product or service might help them solve, and shaping it in that sense, correct?
Correct. But it's also realizing, what is my full capacity and how can I deliver at the optimum representation of my business, and that this particular customer will feel that I delivered on everything that I offered on the front end and will serve as a recommendation to other businesses, or that, you know, I have that such a successful relationship with them that they would be agreeable to me sharing that kind of insight with potential customers I have, because you really want the success of what you do to serve as a relationship builder. for all the advertising that you do, there's probably nothing that's going to be more significant than a customer who was so happy with the work that you did and that they spread the word organically.
Word of mouth is great. It's the best. It's the best source of referral, right?
Exactly.
Then it's coming from a trusted friend. You're like, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
You know, we work with a photographer and he is absolutely, absolutely amazing. And what's amazing about his work is he doesn't do it just well for us. He does it for everyone else. But everything he's done for us is consistent. He began at one level, and it was a very good level of service. And then he was able to grow in terms of his capability with our organization. But that relationship makes it easy for me to refer and recommend him to other clients. And when I see him with other clients, we're like, he is great. And I'm like, yes. Yeah. So to that degree, it is. You want to build that relationship because it really helps to grow your business and build your reputation.
Yeah, that really is the best compliment you can get is when you've made that referral. And then that referral, the client comes back to you and says, thank you so much for introducing me, in this case, to that photographer, because they really did provide an excellent service and you feel that much better.
Correct.
Yeah, that's the best in any business. And I mean, even for me as a chiropractor, if someone says, hey, I want you to see my friend, I'm like, wow, that's great. Or like, I want you to see my wife. You're like, oh, awesome.
Absolutely.
Like, right. You know, it's like, there's that trust there. You know, they like the work you're doing, whatever that work is, you know? So that's all really great to have that. And then for the minority-owned businesses, how can they better prepare themselves for these conferences? I think, you know, you were kind of hitting on that a bit, but any other words of advice for preparation?
I think you have to kind of study the business. So if we were to talk about minority businesses that may have interest in some of the conventions that we have that come to Philadelphia, I think it's understanding the business opportunity exists. Let's say a group is coming to Philadelphia in 2021, and we make that introduction to them in, you know, 2019. The idea is that you've made the connection, you learn about their business, perhaps they'll be in two other cities between the time that you met them in Philadelphia and when they actually come to Philadelphia. So it's building a relationship with that customer. It's also understanding that business. You know, if I am someone who produces these really great scissors and I've worked within the school system for years and I want to adapt into, you know, having this incredible product that could be made available on a convention show floor, I really need to understand what that is to be on a convention show floor. What's the difference in terms of that customer and the customer's expectation? What are some of the issues around how they will put me into their procurement process that may in fact work to my benefit or not? If I'm comfortable with doing business with an organization that's in my city, now I'm getting involved in organizations that will go from city to city to city. Or maybe if I'm pursuing being a client or a service provider for a convention, I may not actually be working with the convention. I might be working with the planner or someone who is facilitating the activity of that group when it comes to Philadelphia. So I'm a big advocate, especially in our space, for those businesses that are interested in getting access to opportunities around conferences and conventions to just know that they understand that business and what are some of the things that are going to be either required of me or some of the different expectations that might be in play that I wouldn't necessarily have with other customers.
Right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and you spoke a little bit about procurement there in that mix of sort of tips that minority-owned businesses can use to prepare themselves. Looking at procurement, what are some of the procurement strategies that minority-owned businesses should focus on using to increase their likelihood of getting that piece of business?
Well, I think it's understanding whatever the procurement process is for some organizations, and some it might be, you know, just a simple submission of a proposal and it will go through their organizations. More and more of them will have some sort of online process that you'll go through. I think it's also realizing that as you kind of look at that procurement process, there'll be expectations around your business certification. They'll certainly want to have some sense of your business history. They'll want to know what's the financial positioning of the organization. Some of the other things that they'll need to be prepared to answer are capacity, especially like in the case of us, because they may need 1,000 of something, 2,000 of something, and they need it on this day.
Right.
Yeah.
So part of that procurement process is that they know that you have the capacity to be able to deliver. there is going to be an inquiry in terms of that particular business's experience in this space. So if they're not, you know, if they haven't been in the space, it makes it difficult for someone who's coming from Los Angeles to Philadelphia, who's working with someone who's going to provide this really important, valuable giveaway that we want to present to our guests. But I don't know how this person can really work in the need that I have. So there are a lot of specific questions. A lot of it will be in the space around your capability to deliver at the volume that they need, certainly credentialing, certification of your business, the financial condition of your business. And like I said, some of that could be through a regular submission of material. Some of it may be an online process. But in any case, the more you're prepared in that, the better your opportunities would be.
And you mentioned in there businesses that don't have a lot of experience. So just quick sidebar, do you recommend any particular strategies for building some of that essential experience that they're going to need when they're going to these procurement meetings? If you're a business that's just starting out, what are some of the strategies that you can employ to kind of build up that book of experience?
Well, if I kind of take it back to our business, I think if you're going to get in the space of meetings and conventions, you'll probably maybe want to spend some time going to a conference and kind of looking at some of those providers, you know, and kind of get a sense from them, you know, of some of the things that they are encountering and some of the things they've done. There are a lot of local meetings and conventions that just take place in Philadelphia. And if there's a particular theme or subject matter that is of interest to you, it's a good thing to just kind of go and make some observations. Because even though you haven't worked in that space, if you've just familiarized yourself with that space, you probably can do pretty well in that. The other thing is, you know, study the industry. Make sure you understand the language. You know, there'll be, you know, terminology, the hospitality, meeting and convention industry, we all deal with acronyms. And what you don't want to do is kind of get lost in what their conversation is, even though you may understand all the acronyms and abbreviations in your business. You should also have a sense of it as it relates to other industries. We have a couple of big industry-related conferences. Like there's a hotel show that takes place in New York. I would say if anyone has an interest to kind of learn about our business, that's a good way to at least see big scale and kind of get some sense of how would I plug into this? How would I fit into this?
Right.
But the more familiarization that they could have, I think the better it would be for them.
That's great advice. Yeah. And they can set up meetings while they're there. They can
Correct.
Meet people, ask a ton of questions, right? And then see if there are opportunities. Even sometimes you don't want to give away the farm. Obviously, you are trying to start a business, but doing some things sort of quote unquote pro bono to get your feet wet might not be a bad way to get in. Would you agree to that?
I would, but I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that, you know, the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau is a membership-based organization. And what we try to do is to provide resources for our local businesses. And some of that's educational programs that helps to explain the process. And I think that kind of tapping into the resources that you have available, I know even at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, you know, they have a module or a vehicle for you to become listed as a vendor. So those kinds of resources are there. It's just as you tap into them and use that as, you know, one of the ways to help to better position your business and to help increase your knowledge, will just give your business a better opportunity.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you get to network with some of the other people who are coming up in the industry.
Absolutely.
And you can help each other
right.
out.
And I will say that there is a lot of cross communication between existing members of the Bureau who will tell new members of the Bureau the experience that they've had and how they were able to work with a particular customer or work in the meeting and convention space. So it may not necessarily be the knowledge that you get directly from the customer. It might be some other business that's working with a customer, and that can be extremely valuable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure too, like the more knowledgeable you are on these things, the more comfortable you'll be in the setting. So that'll make you appear more confident and more desirable.
Exactly.
Yes. Which is helpful.
Great point. Great point.
Right? If you're comfortable and confident, people are like, okay, this is a good, this could be a good fit. I would think more so than someone that's like, I don't know what's happening.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Margaret's right. If you show up to a meeting and you look like a deer in headlights when they ask you a question about procurement,
right.
that's not going to bode well for you. And you're hurting your reputation more so than you are in any way helping your business, right?
Yeah.
And you'll find that there'll be some processes that can take a long time. And you'll need to kind of, you know, synchronize that with your business timeline as well. Some are going to require you to have to go to other cities. So it's not all going to be handled here. So there are a variety of different considerations. But the more you become familiar and knowledgeable about the industry, I think the more successful you can be.
Definitely. And what are some other long-term strategies that minority-owned businesses should use to ensure likelihood of their future success?
Well, once again, I think the long-term is always about the how successful I was. You should be mindful of getting testimonials from businesses that have had a great experience with you.
Yeah, that's
so
smart.
You know, it's not just necessarily the idea of the work that I went through to get this customer, and then I got that customer. And if that customer turned out to be a very successful collaboration, then you want to be able to tie that to your business as you go forward. Can they become that advocate for you and talk about it? How can you raise the awareness of your involvement with something that was very high profile? Like, for example, during the NFL draft, we worked collaboratively with a number of organizations here in the city to curate a list of minority businesses or diverse businesses that we could present to the organization that was, you know, kind of tabulating a list of vendors. And to be a part of that, which was interesting, it wasn't about just being a part of the NFL draft while it was in Philly. It was about being on their list. So every city that they go to, they would go back to that list that they were able to curate in Philly.
Wow.
So it's thinking beyond just the existing opportunity that has made itself available to me, but how do I become a part of it? And needless to say, if you were fortunate enough to get some of that business, you'd want to be able to include that in the story that you tell about your business.
Mm-hmm.
And building a connection with those who you did the business with, so perhaps they can join you in a sales presentation that you need to make, or if they provide you access to any of their logo or testimonial that you can present, I think that's it. But it's connecting the dots of what you do so that it's not, it was a great customer and I move on to the next. Like, you know, be sure to keep them as a part of your story as you go forward.
Right.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah.
And so what are some of the barriers that minority-owned businesses are facing regularly? For example, I know access to capital, right, is going to be a big one usually. But what are some of those other ones? And looking at those barriers, what are the best strategies that they can use to work around those particular barriers?
So the first thing I would certainly say is I've talked to various leaders from the diverse chambers. The number one is access to capital. And I think there are some traditional models in terms of small business lending that makes itself available. And you should certainly not discount that. You should just continuously work through those resources. But I think today, minority businesses are looking at some of the non-traditional sources of funding, whether it's working with the Philadelphia Industrial Development Corporation that may have some investment money to support a business that's going to be in the local market, or as I've learned, the Community Development Financial Institutions, or CDFI, in terms of the investment that they can make in your business because it helps to benefit a local community. And then, of course, to become much more familiar with the venture capital space, you know, building the relationships with those organizations that really want to have a social impact anyway. So mm-hmm. some of the things that you do as a business may have that ability to improve the community or help to serve as a model for individuals who are part of your community.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it a complete package, but it's a part of what you need. So you'll obviously work through managing your own internal resources and leveraging great credit so that as you need to grow your business, you have access to it. But it's realizing that there are a few different pockets and that you shouldn't limit yourself. And to that degree, I think the more knowledge you have, the more relationships that you build, the better it is. We have a number of great banks here in Philadelphia that have a great deal of resources to support diverse businesses. And I think you just have to be mindful of that and kind of keep them in that conversation with you as well. So I think the idea of access to capital comes up number one. I think the second thing that comes up, though, is the issue around collaboration.
Hmm.
How do I not necessarily be the lead on this? Can I successfully grow my business if I'm a sub? And if I am a sub, you know, kind of work through what your priorities are in terms of when you get paid and how you get paid. And but more importantly, not discounting the value of collaborating with some other organization. And if they were the lead in this particular job, maybe it builds your reputation that you can be the lead in the next job and you may bring on a sub.
Right.
But I think that idea of partnering and collaborating is really important. The third thing I would say is networking and getting out there with your business. While I can appreciate the level of commitment and dedication that and prioritization that you have around your business, if people don't know you, then they don't know you. So I think it's important that you also prioritize to get out there and shake your hands with people and get to know people, because while networking events can certainly be very time consuming and very difficult when you're trying to manage a business, you also have to be your chief marketing officer for your organization. So building the priority around the ability to get the name of your business out should be at the top of who you are and what you do. And then lastly, I think for most business, it's that succession planning, you know, build a long-term strategy. So who is the next to kind of move your business right forward? Even if it's you want to build some sort of hierarchy to grow your business, then look at, you know, those who are in your business to help take it to another level. Perhaps building in that succession plan is really more about growing the unit that you have in Pennsylvania, and you may want to start and launch another venture in New Jersey or something like that. So those seem to be, I think, the four things that kind of come to mind.
Well, that's great. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and definitely love the networking aspect of it. You know, again, that brings back just building relationships.
Absolutely.
I think it's just very important for every business.
Yeah.
Just build relationships with different people.
Right. When we do our business opportunity lunch, we're very sensitive to the fact that it's a two-hour commitment. But we will put an emphasis ensuring that that room has a lot of the people that you want to meet. And certainly the customers, the planners of conventions that we have who are featured is a great way to build some networking and relationship. But, you know, for the 30 minutes that you're in that networking reception, there are some great people to shake hands with. And obviously the folks who are going to sit at your table can be great ones to connect with.
Yeah.
So that relationship and that connecting to people can be really good.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You never
and
know.
Just building on that, looking at networking, when you do invest the time to go to a networking event, first of all, bring your business cards, right?
Totally. Although there are a lot of people who have become much more technologically sophisticated,
right,
don't have business cards. And in that respect, you might have to bump your phone or something.
connection, right? But also then it's also the post networking opportunity work that you have to do, right? And
I
know it's time consuming, as you
right
said, but would you agree that the follow-up is even more important than the handshaking and business card exchange?
So I would say that there is an art to networking. And to that degree, you've selected the right event to go to.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that you've kind of researched it. You know who your targets are. And in successful networking, it's not going to be quality. If you come back with 25 cards, that's great. But if there were really only four people that you needed to meet, you want to try and target to get to those four people. And I think from that respect, you feel that networking is a very productive experience. You don't need to be there until it absolutely ends to be at least to say that was a great event or it was a great experience, but what's the targeted purpose? And then to your point, it is all about the follow-up. What was the reason why I went? What was this person's role or their organization? How is it going to help my business? And what's my follow-up strategy? Even if I meet that person, what was my strategy
right
of follow-up afterwards? I can say throughout the number of years that I've attended networking events, the education has always been about what's your follow-up strategy. Even I would even say it's great if you can create your own standardized follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Just what you use all the time, but that you definitely do it because it makes an impression. And if that follow-up is, I want to do a phone call, if that's, I want to do an email, The one thing I will say that has certainly changed the dynamics today is that so many people are involved in social media. And from a business perspective, it is LinkedIn. And I would certainly encourage anyone who, as a small business, is trying to figure out how to expand their network and make their network more meaningful, it's to really look at some of the social media aspects or platforms. And I would highly recommend LinkedIn and realize that there's a lot of business activity that is now taking place when it comes to that. Some individuals will say, I don't have a business card, just look me up on LinkedIn.
Right.
And then build the connection from there. Although I would say that the communication in LinkedIn is not as instantaneous. It doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. It may not happen at the moment
right.
you send it.
Right.
But the reality of it is that it's become more of a vibrant part of how people are able to make those kind of business connections. And some people just won't have cards. They'll say, just look me up on LinkedIn. And that really is what starts it.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, just to quickly recap what you just said, that follow-up, you essentially said create sort of a just quick template follow-up email. Right? You can, and make it sound personalized so that it doesn't sound like to whom it's making
correct.
Yeah, change the name.
Yeah,
put
actually,
the name in.
Actually take a quick second to write in the person's name and, right. you know, just say it was great meeting you at XYZ event. I'd love to meet you for coffee or something along those lines.
Correct.
And that can be a big door opener for
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like your point about the consistency of just making sure that you're
right.
doing that.
Right. I really don't want to overstate it, but I cannot emphasize enough how valuable social media has become
mm-hmm.
in
yeah.
terms of adding to the capability of a diverse business or a small
yeah.
business,
because right.
you may not have the full marketing budget and you may not have the ability to go to everything. There's ways that you can build relationship with potential customers just by engaging with them through social media.
Oh, yeah.
And once again, I kind of say LinkedIn, but I think that's an important benefit that is becoming more beneficial perhaps to small businesses
mm-hmm.
than big businesses when you're trying to be as engaged and as visible as you can possibly be.
Yeah, we did, not to self-promote too much, but we did another episode actually a few weeks ago with Jim Staples of Jim Staples Consulting, plugging Jim again, and he's a marketing consultant, and our listeners, I encourage them who are listening to this episode to maybe go back and listen to that episode, because there are a lot of those social media marketing
yeah.
tips and advice that you can implement into your business right away.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely big. And Instagram, too. People are using that
oh, yeah,
like crazy
sure.
to promote their businesses
yeah.
and stuff like that.
If you have a very visual business, absolutely. I think
yeah, it's
it
a
helps
good idea.
To, you know, allow you to use your dollars more effectively
right.
and communicate in a way that really resonates.
Absolutely. And what other tips do you have to help businesses become more business ready?
Well, I think you always want to study up as much as you can on new trends. And I think that probably is one of the best ways to suggest that you're business ready, or perhaps to get subscriptions, digital subscriptions to different resources that will send you like the top five of something. In our business, there are some newsletters that come out, and they might be daily newsletters that will give you the top five things you need to know, top 10 things you need to know. But I think in order to be business ready, you just have to continuously and always be a sponge and realize that there's going to be new information that comes your way
yeah.
that you at least need to evaluate. Whether you adapt it is another story, but I think it's important to not rest on your laurels of what you know about your business and be open-minded to new and different ways of how you can become that much more impactful. I think you should probably always think in terms of investing in some sort of educational program annually that just keeps you up to date with new trends or further evaluation of existing business practices that can move you forward. And needless to say, when it comes to different policies, especially around taxes and licensing and certification, you know, those are the kind of things that you want to at least position yourself to have some direct flow of information that comes to you that you can look at on the fly, or that there's an opportunity for you to have an isolated focus experience through some educational activity.
That's smart. Yeah. And just being adaptable in your business, because everything changes all the time, right?
It is. And there are a number of, you know, resources through either the small business development centers at different academic institutions where they'll promote different programs. Obviously, if you're a member of the various chambers or business organizations or associations, they provide a lot of good workshops. But I think that it's that constant flow of information that can come to you as a business, which will help you to be more business ready, especially when there are things that just seem to change overnight and you haven't had a chance to get fully up to speed, but at least you're aware of it.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a great point. And to that end, just a quick follow-up on that, when you're doing those sort of chamber involvement things, and that kind of goes back to the networking discussion, keep in mind that it's time in equals time out.
Absolutely.
Right? If you don't show up to a lot of events and you don't, you know, you just join a chamber with some expectation that in and of itself is going to generate business.
Correct.
It's not. You really need to put in the time, go to events, meet people. And, you know, if networking's not your thing, like you said, go to a workshop or stay sharp. And so PHL Diversity offers some of those workshop opportunities, correct?
So PHL Diversity works very closely with the City of Philadelphia's Department of Commerce.
Okay.
They produce Minority Enterprise Development Week, which is a celebration aligned with the U.S. Department of Commerce. And we produce various educational programs during the course of that week. We try to do things outside of your traditional Minority Enterprise Development Week subject. Don't get me wrong, I think there's some fantastic programming that's done, but we've looked at issues of unconscious bias. We've encouraged individuals who have participated in that workshop to kind of do some self-evaluation of their own unconscious or implicit biases and how that can be adverse to their business. We worked with a consultant out of Providence who did individual analysis. And then when we executed the workshop, it was actually quite insightful because there was an individual review of you, which helped to make it much more personal than just a general audience. We've also done workshops on those who are interested in hotel ownership. We worked with the National Association of African American Hotel Owners, Operators, and Developers, and they came in and they talked about everything from, I have an idea to, I'm opening my hotel.
Wow.
So it was a great, insightful session. And then most recently, we wanted to focus on women CEOs, women leaders. And we produced a program that had a great title, What I Was Not Told. And it goes on to talk about systemic issues that really impact women business owners. There was a genuine dialogue of four incredible women who lead businesses with about 100 women who aspire to lead and own their own businesses.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And there was a lot that had to do with the fact that as women who were part of a family, that there was the thought that the brother would be the one who took over the business. And in fact, it was a sister. And they were talking about, you know, the responsibility, the issues of succession planning. Mm-hmm. And they talked a lot about the issue of sacrifice and what that meant. They talked a lot about, you know, some of the challenges for women who are in the leadership CEO role when they deal with things around finance and investment in their businesses, and how as women, there's this perception that they maybe don't have a deep understanding of the subject. But it was such a powerful program. I mean, I felt like I was watching like this incredible television show, and I said, wait a minute, I have to pay attention. But it was really good. But those kind of programs, we're really proud to be able to produce because we feel that it brings value to our local diverse business communities and gives them not just the traditional, but an enhanced way of kind of looking at ways that they can be competitive in their business.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. And so now going back sort of full circle, now looking at the other side of things, what are the advantages to bringing MBEs, minority-owned businesses, on as subcontractors for other businesses? So now we're looking at the businesses who are the primes or the primaries on certain projects that they've won and they need to bring on a minority-owned business for whatever reason, or they just are considering one. What are some of the benefits to doing so?
Well, I think the benefit is anytime you think of, you know, diversity and inclusion, it takes an existing idea and through that inclusion, it enhances it and it makes it better. So at the end of the day, that's what I would say. It allows for you to have different businesses for contributing in a way that perhaps you would not have an access. So here's the idea. If I'm a business and we make ham and cheese omelets all the time, they're probably really, really good ham and cheese omelets.
I would imagine if you're making them, they're probably
they probably would be. But perhaps there's a Latinx firm that has this great sauce that is good on everything, but it goes incredibly well with this ham and cheese omelet. Huh. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is we've become more diverse in terms of who we've partnered with my traditional ham and cheese omelet. But now I'm giving it a twist that makes it even that much more better than perhaps what it would have been. And that's what I really think is where the rubber hits the road when you engage diverse businesses. You add new dimensions to your product line. You provide new interpretation of the service that you have as a company. It also shows as a business, you are very forward thinking and that you really want to ensure that this is a overall community that can benefit by it because, you know, we can lift all boats if we all think in the same way.
Right.
And I think that's where it is most important to engage with diverse businesses. It will enhance the quality and the offerings of your business in ways that, you know, you probably wouldn't suspect until you start to see the end product.
Right. That's a great
point. Absolutely. Yeah.